listening to CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Red Sox Beat podcast presented by CLNS Media. That's your leading online audio and video provider for Major League Baseball. I'm the host of the show, Chris Cotillo, Red Sox Beat reporter for MassLive.com. Today is September 19th. We have episode 234 of the show. It's brought to you by betonline.ag, which is CLNS's preferred online sportsbook, and Roman, a discreet and convenient way for men with ED to get some help. Today we're going to welcome in for episode 234 my colleague at MassLive, not Chris Smith, who we've had on the last couple weeks, but Matt Vautour, who's our columnist. He's been at Fenway this week covering some of the Mike Yastrzemski stuff with me, so I thought this would be a good time with the season winding down and not really a big story of the week other than Mike Yaz to call in the columnist and just get some hot takes, because that's what you know, being a columnist is all about. So, Matt, right off the bat, give me a hot take about the Red Sox.
I think their season isn't as bad as people think it is. It's just bad compared to what the expectations were.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. If you look at it, it's still a team that's 7 games over .500 with 11 to go, and just some really, really good wild card teams, too. I mean, the Indians, the Athletics, the Indians, Athletics, and the Rays have just played, you know, out of their minds and are going to be 90, 95 win teams in the wild card. So I actually agree with your take there.
Well, that definitely eases my mind. I was worried.
Yeah, sorry. So we had, you know, I think at Fenway this year, the first topic we'll get to, I think, is, you know, the Red Sox have obviously been pretty bad at home. There have been really not a ton of walk-offs, not really memorable ones that I can remember. I mean, Christian Vasquez had a walk-off home run, I guess, and there were some other cool moments. And you know, I guess David Ortiz coming out to throw out the first pitch, that was kind of clouded by the whole Dombrowski firing. So there really haven't been that many cool moments at Fenway this year. Comparison, you know, you think about Mookie's grand slam last year after that long at bat and some of the other things we saw. So for a Red Sox team that is, you know, at home 36-41, and they're going to end with a losing record at home, which is crazy. It was, I think, cool that we got one of the signature moments probably of the baseball season, even in a garbage time game the other night, Mike Yastrzemski hitting his home run and his Fenway Park debut in the same place where his grandpa Carl played for so long. I thought before the game, and I might have mentioned it to you, I know I talked to some other people, I said the chance that this guy hits a home run either tonight or in the rest of the series is about 1,000%. And I saw DraftKings and FanDuel tweeting out, like, this guy's a lock, you know, because he's could be just because of the narrative of tonight. So we were both there for that, and it wasn't the biggest crowd. Obviously, it was cold and the team's out of it, but still, I thought that moment was really, really cool.
Me too. And it's one of those things that kind of only can happen in baseball. That while there is generational connections in other sports, you don't get that same feel where him playing in left field in front of the wall at Fenway Park. There is no equivalent of that in other sports. And so for him to, if he had done nothing at the plate, the fact that he was out there and there was a Yastrzemski playing in front of the wall was a special moment. But the fact that he hit that and to do it on that third at bat, as he kind of got a little better each time against Eovaldi, it was perfect. And the line I liked was he kind of hit it exactly between the wall that his grandfather played in front of and the retired number that his grandfather has in the right field facade there that forever. It was sort of a perfect, it was a perfect moment that everybody sort of thought about, could it happen? And even though you knew it, what it would be like if it was possible, it was still special when it did.
Yeah, it was. And obviously, you know, it got there very early on Tuesday to see the moment of where he and Carl met it on the field, and they did an interview with Peter Gammons. But, you know, Carl's obviously very proud of him, and he was at the game Wednesday night, threw out the first pitch, which I thought was really cool that they had, you know, him throw it out and Mike catching it and all that stuff. So that was a really cool moment. It's just, you know, this guy has toiled in the minor leagues for 6 or 7 years. The Orioles never gave him the chance, which is crazy because you think of the level of talent the Orioles have that could right. use a guy like that.
Well, you think too, it's not that like Vlad Guerrero Jr. doing it either, where he was supposed to be a star from, you know, from the moment he appeared in prospect lists and things. He was always going to be great. This was a little bit more special because it came out of nowhere. This was more he's more Brian Daubach than he is Vlad Guerrero Jr. in terms of that, you know, a late bloomer, somebody that that had been overlooked by so many. And yet, it's exactly like you said, it that the Orioles, you know, how could somebody be a competent major leaguer and not make the Orioles?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it's also kind of funny in a way that after, you know, being drafted by the Red Sox originally and then being in the Orioles system and, you know, being kind of on the verge of the big leagues in the American League East for 6 years, his chance comes randomly because the Giants happened to be here in September for, I don't know, the second or third time ever. So a lot of stuff that, you know, the unlikelihood of it, it's pretty crazy, and that everything would come together. But obviously one of the cooler moments that I think was, as things have been for the Red Sox this year, overshadowed by what happened after that home run the other night, Tuesday night at Fenway, because that game went 5 hours and 54 minutes. And for you, who you know, come to, you know, probably a dozen games throughout the season, maybe you'll get one or two of those a year, but it's something that, especially in September, is becoming a huge, huge problem for, I'm going to say baseball, but really, you know, the baseball writers, because this is, it affects us. The fans are clearing. Fans are clearing out. I mean, the Red Sox, they have throughout the year led the league in game time. Now they're using, you know, 15 pitchers a game or whatever it's been. They're using 7 or 8 pitchers. If you look at just the game times in September, I mean, constantly over 3. We have a 348, 325, 337, and this game goes 15 innings, a 7-6 Giants win. It goes 5-54. And if you look at, you know, just to look at the box score and kind of the ridiculousness of September baseball, the pitchers used by the Giants were Logan Webb, Andrew Suarez, Tyler Rogers, Fernando Abad, Handel Gustav, Sam Coonrod, Will Smith, Sean Anderson, Sam Selman, Burt Smith, Wandy Peralta, Kyle Barraclough, and Derek Rodriguez, who somehow, some way, is the son of Pudge Rodriguez. I didn't know that. On the Red Sox side, Nathan Eovaldi, Colton Brewer, Bobby Pointer, Ryan Brazier, Josh Taylor, Brandon Workman, Matt Barnes, Marcus Walden, Andrew Cashner, Brian Johnson, and Trevor Kelly. So
I feel confident that you pronounced Will Smith correctly.
Yeah, and Trevor Kelly and Matt Barnes and all those guys. So that was good. But I think, you know, you saw it. They're making pitching changes in the 14th, matching up. You know, this guy's coming in, and here comes pinch hitter Gorkys Hernandez. And it's like, at this point, you're both out of it. You know, it's nice that, I guess, that they're still fighting and still competing and looking for wins. And there's pride on the line and everything. But, God, it was absolutely brutal for about a four-hour stretch.
It is. It's hard to watch. I mean, I don't expect anybody to be sympathetic to the writers in this situation, nor should they be. But I mean, what's the option if you're not shrinking the rosters, and they're going to do that next year? I mean, right. if you're Alex Cora, if you're Bruce Bochy, who's just about done, mm-hmm. You know, what's the option? Are you supposed to not manage like you're trying to win? I mean, I give them at least a little credit for because I'm sure they're tired too. I mean, they've unlike us, they've been at all 162, and yeah. So I'm sure there's got to be temptation to mail it in, and I don't think either one of them did. Yes, but I think baseball has to address that. But as far as that game itself, had that been a game between the Indians and the Twins, it would have been terrific because there had been, you know, something on the line. It just happened to be two teams that wanted to have something on the line at this time of year and don't.
And two teams that probably went into it with playoff hopes. Obviously, the Red Sox did, and the Giants. You know, I just kind of was looking around their clubhouse yesterday. A lot of older guys, a lot of veterans, but a lot of guys who are really talented. A team that you thought, you know, could be a contender in the wild card. I think, you know, two things that are going to help next year: 28-man rosters in September will make things a lot more tolerable, and then, you know, the 3-batter minimum once that's instituted. Less pitching changes, less pitchers, and I think, you know, we won't see the major league record tied ever again, probably, for pitchers used in the game, because you know, they had their shot to break it. They didn't get there because the Giants won in 15, but it's a record that you know, I'm really not thrilled to have been in attendance for the maximum pitchers. I think, you know, we're just in September. The Red Sox are using or pulling out all the stops. They're matching guys up. They're getting a look at different guys for next year, and that's great. But especially when there's nothing to play for, and as we sit and record this, the Red Sox are going to have an afternoon game today. If they lose that, they're officially eliminated from the playoffs as of now. With basically, you know, they'd have to win out. Everybody else would have to lose out. That's not going to happen. So they're effectively eliminated. But you know, for them to be, you know, going matchup by matchup in extra innings is tough to watch. And as we saw, you know, there weren't a lot of fans there, even by the seventh or eighth, and it was tough because, you know, the Yastrzemski moment kind of got lost because it felt like so long ago by the end of the night. Matt?
Yeah, it did. It totally did.
You know, I had Chris on the podcast last week. We talked a lot about the Dave Dombrowski move and everything, and I know you were caught up in some Patriots stuff for when that happened, but I just wanted to get, you know, the columnist take, like I said, on that move, how it went down, how they handled it, and everything involved.
Well, I think it's one of those things that it almost doesn't feel fair because of the success that he had that you fire him. But I don't think they fired him for the job he did as much as they fired him for the job that awaits the Red Sox general manager going forward, and the right. fact that he's probably not built for that. The idea of rebuilding a farm system and starting things a little fresher is not his strength. It's just, you know, that he hasn't approached a situation that way in a long time, not since early in his career. Mm-hmm. And you look at the job that he did with the Tigers and how things kind of fizzled out after, you know, they had their window and then they, you know, cratered. And so I think the Red Sox looked at this like it's time to rebuild the farm system and put the organization from top to bottom on a firmer and a more consistent, more consistent footing. And I don't think he's the guy to do that. I think the Red Sox handled it poorly in that, I don't know why they couldn't just say that. Everything I just said makes sense, and
yeah,
unless
and everybody knows it too.
Yeah, and everything that, so there are things, unless there's some, you know, secret reason that they got rid of him, mm-hmm. there's no reason that why not just say that. We think Dave did exactly the job. He was perfect for the job that we hired him for, but we feel like we've got to go in another direction when we're, as we move forward. There's no reason you can't say that and wish him well. They had no press conference, which always feels to me like that lacks an accountability. And the quotes they had in their thing, you'd think this was his retirement dinner. They were, you know, talking about Dave Dombrowski's Hall of Fame career. Well, you fired the guy. And right. So if you are doing that, you tell people why. And I know that always sounds like, well, the, you know, media is complaining about not talking to the media, but in this situation, you didn't talk to anybody. It's not like you went out and gave the fans some, you know, some other way to do it. It's just out there as nothing. And so I think, I think that it was really kind of an unprofessional way to do it. And for Sam Kennedy kind of taking the reins of as taking over for Larry Lucchino as the guy that effectively runs the Red Sox, I think that doesn't show well.
Yeah, agreed. And Chris and I talked about that last week. We also talked about, and this is something that, you know, hasn't really been resolved, I think, is that nobody got any idea on how they plan on proceeding with the search. Like, we don't know when it's going to start, a timetable. What I've been told is that the search has begun, but they're not rushing because they're confident in the big four that they have: Eddie Romero, Brian O'Halloran, Zach Scott, and Raquel Ferreira running the show right now. But they are not giving us a timetable. You know, they don't say, well, we hope to have this guy in place by the end of the postseason or by the GM meetings or anything like that. They haven't said any of that to anybody. It's been, you know, pretty surprising that we don't really have anything on what the search is going to be like. We don't know where they're aiming, if they're aiming for an executive with another team, if they're thinking about a first timer, if they want to go internal. You know, just to ask those kind of questions to get some answers would have been really good, because those are things where they could give us at least a vague idea of who they were going to go with. The only answers we have, I think, so far, Mike Hazen signed an extension with the Diamondbacks. He was, I think, one of the preferred guys that they would have liked to bring back. He is not going to because he's going to be in Arizona long term. There are some guys that are expressing some interest. Tim Nehring in New York, the Yankees vice president who played for the Red Sox. Matt, you probably remember Tim Nehring because you're old, right?
I do. I do remember Tim Nehring. And, when he was healthy enough to be on the field, he's a good player.
Yeah, and he's been a very good front office executive under Brian Cashman. You know, a couple other people that are out there. Jason McLeod just got a promotion in Chicago with the Cubs, but has expressed some interest. Ben Charrington's not coming back, which is no surprise for anybody. But, Matt, who do you want as the Red Sox general manager, president of baseball operations next?
I don't have someone specific in mind. I think Tim Nehring certainly represents an interesting candidate. I think Eddie Romero represents an interesting candidate. I think the most important thing though is that from the ownership down to the general manager, to Alex Cora, that there's some understanding of this is what the way they want to run things, because it feels like they've ping-ponged a little bit. All right, they wanted to do it this way with Ben Charrington, and they switched significantly from Ben Charrington to Dave Dombrowski. And so now what are they looking for right now? Because you can't have you can have a middle ground of it, but you have to have that idea in mind. And I think that's the most important thing is that there is an actual, you know, vision and path that they're looking at for who do they want to be in 5 years? What do they want the organization to look like in terms of prospect depth, in terms of how often do they feel like they should be a playoff team? What kind of money do they want to spend? How do they want to approach veteran pitchers, veteran players, contract lengths and things? I think that's something from top to bottom in the organization that needs to be consistent.
Yeah. And you know, I think we always talk about, you know, a weak system. They've had some guys that have actually, you know, shown up this year. Some guys that have really taken leaps forward. The offensive player of the year in the organization, they announced a minor league award yesterday, was Tristan Casas, who was their first round pick last year. A lot of times in these picks for the Red Sox the last few years, you've seen guys be a first round pick, be highly touted, and then be disappointing. Jay Groom has not been on the field. Obviously, you've seen a guy in Jay Groom that has had some off the field issues and some injuries. Trey Ball, a guy from a few years ago, is going to be a minor league free agent without reaching the majors. But now finally, you know, a guy in Tristan Casas really shows up in his first full year and takes off. Outfielder Jaron Duran was really good. He won base runner of the year, but he had an incredible offseason for offensive season for the Red Sox. And then Thad Ward, who was a pitcher out of UCF last year, was their pitcher of the year. So there are some guys who took steps forward. I think people are a little higher on the farm system. So there is a base here that you're starting with. We've seen a couple guys come up. Some guys, you know, were rookies this year and showed up. We had, you know, the conversation with, and we were in the baseball writers meeting the other day talking about, you know, the rookie of the year. And there were some candidates that were, you know, all options. Michael Chavis had a good year, and he was in the conversation for American League Rookie of the Year before he kind of tailed off and then eventually got hurt. Darwinson Hernandez, Josh Taylor came up, pure rookies, and ended up, you know, being pretty good for this club. So there is that kind of young base of talent. I think that the new GM or whoever is starting off with a pretty good talent base, honestly. And then you have two guys who last night on the left side of your infield clinched something that I think this is pretty incredible. And I don't think people have tuned the Red Sox out a little bit because it's football season. But the fact that Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts are the first teammates in baseball history to each have 30 home runs and 50 doubles is pretty amazing. I think Devers is the first Red Sox player since 1965. That would be Tony Conigliaro with 30 home runs, or the youngest since then with 30 home runs. And the Red Sox are going to have a bunch of guys that around 30 home runs, 100 RBI, 100 runs. You know, Mookie is two homers short of 30 home runs if he returns. I know he's dealing with a foot injury right now. JD's over that mark, and obviously Devers and Bogaerts too. So Red Sox a little bit banged up. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. whether it's a knee injury, a bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Everybody's guilty of that. Playing Little League, growing up, you get hit with a ball. You know, we saw Sam Travis even try to stay in the game after getting hit in the head the other night, a scary moment. The same is true for people with erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient and discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/socks and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get it checked out. With Roman, it's never been easier to connect with a doctor. You can just go to GetRoman.com/socks. That's S-O-X. The O is the vowel there, everybody. I know this is an ED commercial. To get a free online visit and a free get free 2-day shipping, that's GetRoman.com/socks for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/S-O-X. So back to, you know, talking about that, starting with rubbing some dirt on it. The Red Sox have a very injured starting rotation right now, and there's a lot of concern moving forward, obviously, for them. David Price is now being shut down for the season. Chris Sale is obviously out for the season. Nathan Eovaldi has not looked good really at any point this year, and he gave up the homer to Mike Yaz, so he ended up providing one magical moment at least for the Red Sox at Fenway this year.
On Nathan Eovaldi bobblehead night, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and those were scattered around the press box that we both grabbed an extra as we were walking out. So I think, you know, when you look at the state of the Red Sox rotation, no Rick Porcello probably coming back next year. Nathan Eovaldi's hurt, he was hurt. Now he's not pitching well. David Price is hurt. Chris Sale's hurt. I mean, this is the strength of your team, and there are major, major, major red flags heading into next season.
I mean, you look at everything else, all the problems of the closer, all the problems of the bullpen, the fact that some of the hitters didn't have quite the season they did, the fact Steve Pierce wasn't there. If you fix the starting rotation, if the Red Sox rotation is 75% of what you hoped they would be coming into the year, the Red Sox are probably in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Forgetting everything else that went wrong, if the starting rotation is passable, they're probably in the playoffs, given how well they hit. But I mean, Chris Sale, I mean, that one of the things Dave Dombrowski that probably hastened his departure was the fact that Chris Sale deal looks terrible now. Mm-hmm. David Price, I don't know, you know, David Price threw an awful lot of innings in the postseason last year, and Eovaldi is always in between injuries. What, you know, if he's either injured or in between injuries, because yeah, that's just the way he's built. So you had such a great year out of Eduardo Rodriguez, and so it feels wasted because nobody else was along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, it's been crazy, and I think, you know, they're gonna have to assess the free agent market, whether that's bringing back Rick Porcello on a you know, short deal. You know, they've had a couple guys that have shown them at least flashes at times, and Yoli Chacina did not pitch well Wednesday night, but it has pitched well so far in a couple of shorter stints. And Andrew Kashner has pitched okay out of the bullpen. Those are a couple guys that, you know, they have seen some flashes from that they could bring. But, you know, I don't expect this team for a team that's going to want to get under the luxury tax threshold and want to save money. They're not going to be in on Gerrit Cole or Madison Bumgarner, who's making his Fenway Park debut this afternoon. They're not going to be in on the highest end of the pitching market. So it's tough, you know, maybe, you know, try to get one of the prospects, whether that be Tanner Houck or someone else, into a starting role. Maybe they look at Darwinson Hernandez as a starter, even though I don't think that's a smart move because he's been so dominant as a reliever. You're kind of saddled with the guys you have. You have so much money sunk into this already. You know, obviously Chris Sale got a big deal, $150 million or $145. You have David Price, who's still pitching out that $217 million deal with 3 years left. Eovaldi, $68 million. You know, Porcello at least is coming off the books, and you can rework him and maybe bring him back for $5 million as an innings eater, which I think you might want to do, because if he can give you 200 innings and he has to be better than this year, you'd think, you know, that might be an important move.
You're not confident in Yulish Chacin being the answer?
I've said it and I'll say it again. He was the best interview of the year after his debut. He held court for like 12 minutes. We were all PR had to cut it off. It was going so well. So I'd love to have that guy back because he was an absolute joy to deal with after he pitched two wonderful innings and a win against the Yankees a couple weeks ago.
Seems worth taking a shot on. His upside might be higher than some of your other alternatives.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's the good part of at least signing him and bringing him in for September is, you know, you don't have to rely on external scouting. You can have tinkered with him a little bit. Maybe, you know, he's not going to command a lot of money. You get two years, $15 million on his last deal after, you know, this, where he was a free agent at the end of August and dealt with injuries and inconsistency. He's not going to cost you that much. And I think, you know, he's a guy that might be worth taking a flyer on. Some other, you know, this is going to be kind of the start of our rapid fire hot takes. Would you re-sign these guys? Just yes or no. Rick Porcello.
Depending on the price, but not for what I think he'll get.
Okay. Mitch Marlin?
No.
Brock Holt.
That's a tough one. He's such an important guy for intangible reasons.
Right.
But
Marco Hernandez will cost you less for the same player, potentially.
For the light beer version of that player. I think if you're trying to get looking at luxury tax implications, I think you probably have to say no.
Andrew Kashner.
No, not at his age, not at what he's given. He's not as a bullpen guy.
And if you're the Red Sox, are you hoping JD Martinez opts in?
Yeah, I think they probably want to keep JD Martinez.
Especially if they're starting to think Mookie's either not going to come back or they're going to try to trade him over the winter. I think locking in JD is important.
I'm definitely in the do what you can to try to save to keep Mookie because you're never going to get that's going to be one of those four quarters for a dollar trade and you never win those trades. And yep. So I think as good as Mookie is, as high as his ceiling is, as an important sort of face of the organization that he is, I think you do what you can to keep him. And you know, even if that's pushing up against luxury tax things, I think he's a guy that's you don't replace him. And for what he is, for what he can offer, he can play, you know, he could play center field if you decide that Jackie Bradley's not, you know, that you're going to make a move there. I think JD becomes a tough call because if keeping him limits your ability to keep Mookie Betts, well then you probably let him go. But it's such a tough situation because I don't know how much of a feel they have for how much Mookie Betts wants to stay.
Right, and he's been holding it very close to the vest. I think that'll be order number one for the next GM when he or she comes in to decide, you know, whether, you know, they think Mookie Betts is going to re-sign or if he's going to be a trade candidate. Matt has done a lot of football in the last few weeks, and he's going to be doing a lot more. I'll be helping out a little bit, actually. BetOnline.ag has the Patriots as the clear favorites to win the Super Bowl again at plus 350, next to the Chiefs at plus 700 and the Rams at plus 700. And the Cowboys and the Packers at plus 1,200. We don't get to another AFC competitor past the Chiefs until we get to the plus 2,000 range. We have the Ravens, Browns, and Chargers. So the AFC, very top-heavy. Football season is here, everybody. Are you ready? Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive a 50% welcome bonus reward on your first deposit and start betting on your favorite pro or college team. I like North Carolina. -3 against Appalachian State this week. Bet on every spread, every total, every winner or loser. Bet on who the first starting quarterback to be benched will be. Could have done that, and you would have had, who was it? Technically Eli, I guess, because the rest
Eli.
Of them
weren't.
Bet on who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. You get the fastest odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners at betonline.ag. Head over to betonline.ag and use your mobile device to join today. A minimum deposit of $55 is required to qualify for the bonus. It's betonline.ag, like Attorney General. That's your online sportsbook experts. We've seen a little bit of Patriots talk before. We let Matt go. Patriots with a huge line last week. What is it at now for the Jets game? Is it 22.5 or 23?
Last I saw it, it was 23.5. It's been kind of all over.
Ridiculous.
It feels like these lines for like college.
It's college football. 22.5. It's college football week one type things. And Patriots, you know, with no end in sight on their domination, especially in the next few weeks. What, I mean, you had them, what, a 12-4 before the season? Was that your prediction?
I had 13-3. I was the 13-3.
And now what do you think?
Now, I mean, you look at there's the stretch in the middle of their season that has some games that they could lose. Yep. You look at the Browns at home, the Ravens in Baltimore, at Philadelphia, the Cowboys, the Texans, mm-hmm. and the Chiefs. That stretch in there, that's not an easy stretch to go back to back in there. I don't think they're going to go undefeated. So the 13-3 still feels decent to me. But if you told me they were going to go 14-2, that wouldn't surprise me either. I think a sneaky tough game next week. I think Buffalo has been better than people thought that they'd be, and that has potential to be at least a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, hopefully Devin Singletary, who's on my fantasy league in my big team, will go off and give the Patriots some problems, even though, you know, the Patriots should win that game. So Matt Votor will be covering the Patriots, the Red Sox, everything else, providing all the hot takes you need for us on MassLive.com. Matt, thank you for joining the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Talk to you.